Hello and welcome to another edition of the debate on Press TV. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. Venezuela is grappling with a deepening political crisis. On Wednesday, the U.S.-backed opposition leader Juan Guaido, who is in charge of the National Assembly, declared himself interim president. President Donald Trump was quick to embrace him, whereas Russia warned against usurping power in the Latin American country through military intervention. France, Germany, and Spain have also jumped on the bandwagon, giving Maduro 8 days to call election, otherwise they will endorse Guaido. Now, why Washington and its allies are pushing for regime change in the Latin American country is a question, and is it about democracy or domination? To start tonight's debate, let's first watch a background report.
The United Nations Security Council has held a session discussing the political crisis in Venezuela. The United States called for the meeting after creating a chaos in the Latin American nation by recognizing opposition leader Juan Guaido as country's interim president. In the meeting, the U.S. Secretary of State accused Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro of oppressing his people, calling for full support for Guaido.
The focus of the U.N. Security Council is to safeguard international peace and security. The former Maduro regime has oppressed its people for years.
But some countries oppose the U.S., saying Venezuela doesn't pose any threat to international peace and security, and that its internal affairs shouldn't be the subject of such a meeting.
Venezuela does not represent a threat to peace and security. If anything does represent a threat to peace, it is the shameless and aggressive actions of the United States and their allies, aimed at the oust of the legitimately elected president of Venezuela.
Russia also accused the U.S. of trying to carry out a coup in Venezuela. Washington expressed support for the opposition leader last week. Maduro reacted to the move by breaking off diplomatic ties with Washington. He also asked American diplomats to leave his country. The U.S. Secretary of State said Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro has no legal authority to break diplomatic ties with Washington. The move divided not only Venezuelans, but the international community as well. Many U.S. allies sided with Washington by backing the opposition leader. Many countries, however, reaffirmed that they recognize Maduro as the legitimate leader of the South American country. The U.S. intervention has led to more tensions in Venezuela. Anti- and pro-government protesters hit the streets across the country. And in many places, the rallies turned ugly. Several people were killed and many more got injured. Many blamed the Trump administration for creating drama and chaos in Venezuela. However, if history teaches us one thing, it's that the people of Venezuela are the only ones who should consider their own fate.
Let's begin the debate. For today, let me invite our guests. We have senior analyst with Foreign Policy in Focus, Ian Williams, who's joining us from New York City, and also publisher and editor of Politics First, Marcus Papadopoulos, out of London. Now, beginning with Ian Williams, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has urged the international community to support Venezuelan opposition leader Juan Guaido as the country's interim president over Nicolas Maduro, demanding them to, quote, recognize the new democratic government led by interim president Guaido. Is this anything but a blatant intervention?
Well, look, it is an intervention, but it's also true that that Maduro barely won the last election by conniving, violence, threats. And he is not a very legitimate president. The question is whether the U.S. has any credentials to intervene on this, because, of course, it's supporting a government in Guatemala that's just thrown out international jurists who are investigating its corruption. So, you know, but we have to be very careful here not to fall into binary positions. Just because President Trump says it's raining doesn't mean to say it's sunny. Sometimes he is right, and in this case, the U.S. is right about the nature of the Nicaraguan regime, and it's not a U.S. boycott that's brought it down. The U.S. is buying almost all of Venezuela's oil, and Venezuela is taking those dollars, and the regime has been misusing them. It's a kleptocracy. I think it's 4 million Venezuelans have fled into other countries, which incidentally sets the precedent for it being a threat to international peace and security, because it was when the Serbians started throwing Kosovars and Bosnians into other countries that it was deemed to be a threat to international peace and security. The real issue here is it's perfectly possible to accept the two premises at the same time. One is the Maduro regime is thuggish, kleptocratic, totally inefficient, and repressive, and at the same time, the United States has no legitimate authority to intervene, as it has tried to do in the past. And what's more, it's almost a 99% probability that any intervention by the United States will be completely disastrous and exacerbate the situation even more. So those are two positions that I can hold without in any way condoning Maduro.
All right, now let me put the same question to Marcus Papadopoulos. Marcus, is this a blatant intervention on the part of the U.S.?
Well, let me say this first of all, that the guest, what the guest said just now was a grotesque distortion of the truth. And I don't know what the guest knows about the former Yugoslavia. I suspect he knows very, very little. But turning to Venezuela, if there is a crisis in Venezuela, then it is a crisis that has been engineered by America. And this is what the United Nations Security Council should be discussing, because once again, the cancerous hand of America is at play in the internal affairs of an independent sovereign country. In Venezuela, the Americans are trying to engineer a coup against the democratically elected president. Let me say that again. The democratically elected president, Nicolas Maduro. And why are the Americans trying to do that? Because Nicolas Maduro will not surrender Venezuela to America so that the Americans can economically exploit this country. Under Maduro, Venezuela pursues an independent foreign policy. Under Maduro, Venezuela's oil industry remains nationalized. And under Maduro, Venezuela has established very, very extensive relations with Russia, which Venezuela has every legal right to do under international law. And it is those reasons alone for why the Americans are trying to engineer a coup against President Maduro. It is once again a sickening example of this malignant country's presence on the international stage. The Americans have the blood of Serbs on their hands, of Iraqis on their hands, of Libyans on their hands, and of Syrians on their hands. And let me tell you from now, if a conflict breaks out in Venezuela, then it will be the responsibility of America.
Okay, Ian Williams. The U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo talked about the suffering and the humanitarian needs of the people of Venezuela. How much is the U.S. and its sanctions responsible for their sufferings?
There are hardly any U.S. sanctions against Venezuela. Venezuela is getting hundreds, billions of petrodollars from selling oil to the United States. This isn't like Iran. This isn't sanctions. This is a case of a kleptocratic regime that's been siphoning off money, misusing it, has been unable to build a productive economy while it preaches socialism, has managed to create shortages. 4 million people have fled abroad from the socialist paradise so far that Chavez and Maduro created. And I mean, when we come to Russia, please, non-interference. This is the Russia that's occupying large parts of Ukraine, is occupying parts of Moldova, is occupying parts, two different parts of Georgia, and has not scrupled to intervene and bully in its neighbors. So yes, America is bad, but Russia is hardly the paragon that I would hold up. In the real case here is that the neighbors, Brazil, Colombia, and other places, not paradises by any means, are facing massive refugee flows from Venezuela. The Venezuelans themselves are facing shortages of elementary medicine, and this in a country that's got billions of petrodollars. It takes a lot of skill to take such an amount of wealth and squander it to create economic chaos and poverty while, I might add, preaching that you are doing this on behalf of the poor and suffering. The poor and suffering seem to be suffering and poor more than ever before. That's why they're fleeing. That's why they're rioting. That's why they're lining up for hours for skimpy rations that might not arrive. The democratic election that he won was done by banning the opposition, locking up opposition leaders, and then the National Assembly that his rival represents was elected, and he just set it aside. He decided that since the National Assembly hadn't produced the results, the National Assembly elections hadn't produced the results, he set up a whole pseudo-national constitutional assembly of his own, staffed it with his own people, and then ran it as a puppet. He has no democratic credentials.
May I jump in and pose a question to the guest? In America, please?
It's your turn, Miles.
Thank you. If Venezuela is a dictatorship, as the guest in America claims, then why are opposition protests taking place there? You would not see opposition protests in Saudi Arabia, a staunch friend and ally of America. Why? Because Saudi Arabia is a dictatorship. So I cannot comprehend the argument of the guest in America as to how Venezuela is a dictatorship when opposition protests are allowed to take place, not just in the capital, but in cities and towns across the country. Could you explain how opposition protests take place in a dictatorship? A ball in your court.
I did not say it was a dictatorship. You said that. Don't set up a straw horse and knock it down.
No, that's what you have been saying. That's what you have been saying.
That represses people. Half the opposition has had to flee
abroad. Do opposition protests take place in an authoritarian regime?
People who demonstrate
but in an authoritarian regime, do opposition protests take place?
The fact that they're so inefficient, they can't even use their
answer the question. In an authoritarian regime, do opposition protests take place? In an authoritarian regime, do opposition protests take place? Answer the question.
Yes, they do. There's an authoritarian regime in Russia, and they take place. There's an authoritarian regime all over the world.
I really don't know where you're coming from. You sound like a press release from the State Department.
Okay, let's get back to the main topic.
It's a grotesque distortion of the truth.
All right, let's get back to the main topic. Let me ask Ian Williams. Ian, a U.S. congresswoman called Ilhan Omar has said that, I'm quoting her, if we really want to support the Venezuelan people, we can lift the economic sanctions that are inflicting suffering on innocent families, making it harder for them to access food and medicine, and deepening the economic crisis. Well, she says that, quote, we should support dialogue, not a coup d'etat. What's your reaction to her comments?
I agree we should support a dialogue. I don't blame the the sanctions are not the cause. They don't need a cause. When you've had a mismanaged economy like this, so often countries get oil and it kills them. You can see what happened to Nigeria, Saudi Arabia. At least they spread the money slightly more wisely than the Chavistas did. He's been buying neighboring regimes, often fairly authoritarian ones themselves, by providing oil money for them and free oil. However, it comes down to it. Why won't he allow an election? Now, what the European Union has called an election. If he is so confident of his popular support, then have an election. And by all means, I would recommend that election be under international supervision, especially the United Nations, and include Russian and Libyan and any other observers you want as well. But why is he scared of elections? Because he keeps losing them. And every time he loses them, he resorts to another constitutional piece of
He's lost the elections
in order to keep
who hands, says he's lost the power. Elections
the
your
national
friends
assembly
in the State
election.
Department your he friends lost. In the White House
so he set aside the National Assembly and declared that he was going to set up another body which he conducted the elections of, and the opposition said they weren't going
that
to have
absolute
it so
nonsense.
As we would
that is absolute
it's
nonsense
as though President Trump set aside the US Congress because he didn't like its decisions.
All right.
I mean, that's exactly what happened. Or Theresa May decided she was going to set aside Parliament and set aside up another.
And what about the United Nations Charter? How do you feel about the United Nations Charter?
If you look at the responsibility to protect...
Because the Venezuelan government is the legitimate government of Venezuela.
By the General Assembly 15 years ago, that when countries are falling into chaos and they cannot protect their own people, then the international community has not just a...
Excuse me. If another country puts sanctions on another country and that causes problems, that is the fault of the country placing those sanctions in the first place.
I didn't call on the United
America has
Nations.
No right to place those sanctions. I am very prepared to accept that the Venezuelan government has made mistakes. They have made mistakes. But the sanctions are what are causing the real problems in Venezuela. And those sanctions have been placed on Venezuela because the Americans want Venezuela to be a vassal state to Washington. If the Americans were so concerned about democracy, then they would not have a strategic relationship with Saudi Arabia.
Okay. Let's cut out the whataboutery. I've already said that the U.S.
No, it's not about whatabout. Let's talk about America's track record when it comes to democracy and human rights. You know very, very well the Americans care nothing for democracy. They care nothing for the rule of law. That is why they have a strategic relationship with Saudi Arabia. And you are wrong to say that the sanctions have not damaged the Venezuelan economy, because they have.
Let's get back to the main topic. Okay, let's not get off.
You sound like a press release from the State Department.
Marcus, I have a question for you.
They denounce the Saudis all of the time. You're not listening. You're listening.
Okay, let's get back to the main topic.
You sound like a press release from the State Department or the White House.
Marcus got a question for you.
Please extend some courtesy. We're not in Saudi Arabia now. We're trying to have a debate. Excuse me. We are not in Saudi Arabia. We are trying to have a debate. Extend some courtesy and respect.
You brought up Saudi Arabia. I didn't.
All right. Now, take it easy, both gentlemen.
We are not in Saudi Arabia. Can we return to the debate, please?
No. Let's get back to the main topic.
Ian, thank you very much.
Ian, allow me to get back to the main topic.
Thank you very much, Ian.
Marcus, it's your turn. Is the U.S. seeking a color revolution, a coup d'etat, or a regime change in Venezuela?
Oh, they absolutely are. Since the 1990s, America has been looking for an opportunity to bring down the Venezuelan government under the then Hugo Chavez and, of course, under today's president, Nicolas Maduro. Why? Because it was in the 1990s when Venezuela nationalized its oil industry. And because of that, American oil companies such as ExxonMobil suffered a tremendous financial hit, because prior to Venezuela nationalizing its oil industry, American oil companies were making hundreds of millions of dollars each year off the backs of the Venezuelan people. They were exploiting the Venezuelan economy like the Americans exploited the Cuban economy before the Cuban Revolution. So the Americans ever since then have been on Venezuela's back. And of course, Venezuela pursues an independent foreign policy, unlike, for example, Colombia. And of course, there are very close political, economic, and military relations between Venezuela and Russia. And that is another extremely important reason for why the Americans are now trying to engineer a coup to replace Maduro with Juan Guaido, who will simply surrender Venezuela to America. Okay. Let's not forget, late last year we heard reports about how Venezuela had agreed for Russia to build an airbase on Venezuelan soil in order to counter NATO's malignant presence on Russia's western borders. Now, that reason alone is why the Americans are attempting to act. Remember, the Americans are the biggest hypocrites in the world. For Washington, it's perfectly acceptable for NATO to be on Russia's borders, but it is not acceptable for the Russian military to be close to America. So, yes, in short, the Americans are breaking international law in a most disgusting way, and they are trying to bring down the Venezuelan government so that Venezuela can become a client state, a vassal state to America. It is absolutely shameful, and I think it is shameful for anyone to defend what the Americans are doing in the world now.
All right, let's go to New York. Ian, U.S. presidential election was also stained with allegations of Russian collusion in favor of President Donald Trump. Now, the question is, can other countries jump in and call the vote null and void in the U.S. and call for another election like the U.S. is doing in the case of Venezuela?
Look, I have to roll my eyes. Any accusation of non-interference in other countries. Chavez was buying influence with regimes all across Latin and Central America. The Russians have interfered consistently in every country in the world. The US has interfered in every country.
Could you
give
an example of how Russia has interfered in every country in the world? You just said Russia has interfered in every country in the world. Name that. Can you just give those examples? Are you really serious that Russia has interfered in every single country in the world?
Marcus, please allow him to talk.
It managed to take a huge jackpot of oil. It nationalized the Venezuelan oil company and managed to reduce production by half while siphoning out a lot of that money to kleptocratic military officers and government officials, taking it away from the poor people who deserved it. The workers of Venezuela have not benefited in the slightest from nationalization after the first few years when Chavez was on a big giveaway campaign. They are reduced
but
to
who
dire
are you to say what's good for Venezuela? That is for Venezuelans to decide. Who are you?
4 million votes on their feet went across the border.
Who are you to lecture the Venezuelans? This is an internal matter that has to be decided by Venezuelans. Why do you feel you have this moral superiority to talk down to other peoples in the world?
People who go to and vote the wrong way.
All right. Okay. Now it's Marcus's turn. Marcus. President Macron of France also says that Venezuelans should be able to freely decide their future. Now, given the Yellow Vest protests in France, shouldn't Macron allow the French people to do so in the first place at home? I mean, what's good for the goose is good for the gander, as the English saying goes.
Well, the double standards when it comes to France not recognizing Nicolas Maduro as president is quite simply breathtaking. Because there are mass protests on the streets of Paris, and there has been appalling, despicable police violence against those protesters. And then President Macron has the audacity to say that Juan Guaido is the legitimate president of Venezuela. Macron knows that Guaido has no legal legitimacy, has no electoral legitimacy. And I think what Macron is doing, he's trying to divert attention away from the mass protests in Paris and the brutal actions of the French police towards those protesters. So he's trying to divert attention away from that onto Venezuela. And as I said moments ago, that is absolutely shameful behavior.
All right. Now, but we're out of time. I should apologize for jumping in. Let me thank our guests who joined us. We had senior analyst with Foreign Policy in Focus, Ian Williams from New York, and also publisher and editor of Politics First, Marcus Papadopoulos from London. And thank you for watching this edition of The Debate. We'll see you soon.